elevate. Seamus Fox.
Okay, guys, welcome to episode number 15, we think.
You sure?
With Seamus and Noel here on Elevate Podcast. Today we have brought on sports scientist Kyle Wallace, who's the owner of Aspire Fitness in Derry. And today we're going to talk about everything athletic performance related, both kind of the psychology of it and the physicality of it. And basically, as we've brought Kyle on because he's a specialist in the topic and a local guy and someone I've known for a long time. So I'll just let Kyle introduce himself on the podcast. So hello, Kyle.
Hello. Good afternoon. My background is sports science. I've been involved in sports science for about 20 years now. And so started off doing my degree in sports science. I have an master's in exercise physiology from Trinity College in Dublin, and I'm currently doing a PhD part-time at Ulster University. And so I've worked in various places in terms of sports science and strength and conditioning as well. So I was a strength and conditioning coach at UCD High Performance Centre. And I've worked for the Irish Football Association, and I'm currently working on my own business at the minute. So,
amazing, bud. And you're still getting time to do a PhD?
Well, it's difficult with three kids. And
I'm sure it is.
Running a business.
Running a business. And, you know, so, but it's enjoyable and it's rewarding as well.
Right. Obviously, you're completely driven towards the education side. And we've seen a massive shift even in our level of personal training with working with General Pop, the kind of shift towards the evidence-based stuff. And
absolutely,
obviously, when it comes to performance and you're dealing with like tiny percentages in the difference of the top 10 or whatever, it needs to come into effect.
Oh, for sure. Like, and just to be, you know, you could work in sports performance with a degree, but now it's moving more towards master's level and PhD level, and that's where the sports performance aspect is going, you know, with that.
And it's getting more popular, like, as a
absolutely
massively so, like, because I suppose it was always professional degrees and you got into things that you felt you were maybe, like, I done engineering in Jordanstown, believe it or not all the way, like, but I done it. I dabbled in it, but you know, you never really reached out to things that I was interested in, like maybe sports performance or something like that.
Well, that's always been my passion. It's always something I've wanted to follow.
What was your, well, leading on that, what was your sporting background? Was it something that led you into performance?
When I was growing up, I just loved sport, all sport in general. So played football, played badminton, tennis, you know, you name it, rugby, you know. If there was a sport, there was an opportunity, you don't like it, you know what I mean? And I suppose it all led off from that interest in it and in participating, but also in watching football and looking at, you know, how did they reach that level? Mm. You know, I was pretty mediocre in terms of my sports performance, but you're looking at them and you're looking and going, well, how did they reach that level? And, you know, one of my heroes, Michael Johnson, 400 meter runner, 96 Olympics, First man ever to win the 200 and the 400 meters, and you know, and you know, and you're looking at him and you go, well, how did he actually do that?
Is that possible?
Yeah. And I suppose it's from that angle that I've always kind of looking, and you know, and that's obviously why I went into sports science in the first place. And you know, I had an opportunity to do A levels, but all I really wanted to do was sports science. You know, you know, and that's always been, you know, what I wanted
because,
to work in. Like, you know,
like I know Kyle. Obviously, I know you a long time. As a matter of fact, but recently, kind of, we've retouched. That's not the right thing. What we did. Anyway, I approached Kyle, and he worked with me on my mobility because it's awful, and he laughed for a long time when he seen me try to do that. But passion is what really shone through in terms of what your business you're running. Even like it was dead. Dedicated to athletes and the progression of athletes, and there wasn't an aspect of business in it.
It was more.
This is my passion. Anyone that does a PhD at your level, because I suppose your business to grow doesn't really require you to be at PhD level.
Not really.
This is just and like to do that. Like if anyone's ever done a PhD out there, like they know how difficult that is to take on board. That is hours and hours of teaching and obviously further education to get yourself to the point where you're a leader and an expert in your field, which you already are, but you want to be at the top echelon of sports science.
And I suppose one of the reasons I set up the business in up here in the first place was there's not wasn't really anything for, you know,
high
athletes,
level performance.
Performance, but even youth performance, you know, guiding those young people and helping them improve their sport. And there really wasn't very much here, you know, when I set that up. And it's gradually starting to come in a little bit more now, which is great to see too. There's more strength and conditioning coaches about now. But when I first set it up, there was really nothing in this area, like, you know. And that was... you know, probably doing a disservice to a lot of the young people in the area in terms
of nurture them and
absolutely.
And tell me this: do you work with many youngsters now?
Oh, absolutely. Probably the vast majority of the people come in are all under 18. And so from a variety of different sports, and we're trying to mentor them and help them improve their performance and, you know, guide them in terms of their lifestyles and stuff too. You know, because that all has an impact on on their performance. You know,
of course.
So that really is something that we focus on a lot, because I suppose that's, you know, there's not probably that many senior athletes here at a high level. So what we do is we focus on the juniors and try and help them to reach that level. And try and so then we push them on and then they can go on to performance programs, so, you know, with different governing bodies and that type of thing, you know.
Which is a good, really good. And tell me this, you kind of touched upon the fact that there isn't a lot of kind of senior level athletes about the idea. Is this a problem for the city, or is it what do you see when you go to different places?
And
where's the break?
I suppose that a lot of the senior athletes would probably move away, you know, depending on where their training bases are. You know, so obviously in football, you know, if you want to play at a high level, you're going to play, you know, you're not going to play here as such. You're going to play in England or Scotland or Europe or whatever. And so people move away, or, you know, if you're involved in some of the individual sports and there's a training base somewhere in England or in Dublin or wherever, there's a tendency, that's where you're going to move. Because that's where you got your specialisms and, you know, and that's, you know, in terms of...
Is that to do with basically from the grassroots up? That there's no real infrastructure there, there's no real, like,
The infrastructure here wouldn't be particularly great. You know, in Belfast it would be a whole lot better. Dublin would be a whole lot better again. But here, you know, it isn't really set up, you know, for, you know, even youth setup, you know, in terms of trying to improve performance in the youth here. And that is a big problem, like, you know what I mean?
Is this a government funding thing, or is it just...
Possibly, there's possibly... to do with that, mostly, like, you know, I mean, up in Belfast you have performance centres, and in around Belfast you have performance centres from Sport NI and from Sports Institute of Northern Ireland. But there's nothing here, and so people have to travel, if they want to access those kind of services. You know,
and is that because of a want or a need, do you think, or what?
I think it's because
they haven't really looked at it in terms of a long-term approach, it's a lack
of foresight. And I mean, this is the second biggest city in Northern Ireland, in the region, as well. And there probably needs to be more focus on helping those who are interested in improving their performance and getting to a higher level. There probably should be a lot more focus from council and from government in trying to improve that, you know. Now, we did, Michael Cook from Sport NI, he had set up a program to help a lot of the juniors, but again, then funding was cut, and that program's been, you know, hasn't been running for a while. But that was a good program in trying to get a lot of the elite juniors in the area into a performance program, you know.
Brilliant. Well, not so brilliant, I suppose, for this area. Like, it's not great. You are right. There seems to be that lack of kind of graduation, I suppose, when they go up a level, and, like, a lot of people interested, especially at teen level.
Absolutely.
And then it just seems
the thing is, and what you see is, it's people aren't getting to that level until they are maybe 18, 19, 20, and then they're only getting introduced to a level where they should have been introduced a year before.
That's the problem. And you notice probably when kids go to football clubs in England, they're playing big catch-up because... they haven't been doing the work here that they needed to do in order to even compete at a, you know, under 18 or an under 20 level. And that's the difficulty, in that we need to really be putting a lot more resources into those youngsters, to trying to get them up to a level where they should be when they're starting to
see even like the Foyle Cup and teams coming over, and even how those players are developed compared to local
absolutely.
Players. And all right, there's genetics come on, they play as well too, but it's because of development
and
as well.
And there's recruitment in the way they recruit players, you know, because some clubs, what they'll do is they'll recruit big and strong players at a young age.
Yeah,
I was going to say that. Is but that doesn't
necessarily mean that they'll progress.
No.
Because once the younger ones and the smaller ones catch up to that level, then they tend, not always, but they tend maybe to have be a little bit more technical in their technique.
Yeah.
Because what they've had to do, they had to compete in some shape or form with those who are more developed at a younger age.
And this, again, is not exactly research, and I'm quoting here, but in American football, do they not choose certain positions based on your dimensions and speed? And so they basically pick you based on your structure.
To a certain degree, that's
same in rugby.
You're identifying, different genetic physical aspects, which is what you need to do to a degree. But
psychology must come into it, like the mental kind of aspect of training and coaching someone must come into it. Like, there's got to be two people, completely different body types, and the one that they might think is lesser is going to be a better player. Or,
well, again, it depends. Like, you know, if you're a basketball player and you're 5 foot,
the chances are
pretty slim. Whereas if you're a basketball player and you're 7 foot, but you don't have the best skills, well, then maybe we're more likely to recruit those and try and develop the skills.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, so there is that aspect of it where genetics do play a big part in it.
Yeah.
But it depends on the sport, it really does,
If you had your way and you had the funding, etc., what would it be that you would implement here in a local area?
Well, I think
that what you're already doing basically.
Need to start to develop is developing the youth players. And the program actually that has been cut from the AFA and the GAA, they were going into schools and working on fundamental movement skills from 4-year-olds to 8-year-olds.
Yeah.
And that funding was cut by the Department of Education there recently. And it really needs to start there.
Yeah.
But then it needs to keep going, right throughout the age groups.
Yeah.
You know, so when they're hitting 13, 14 years old, then they can access performance services, to try and make their performance better, progress.
And as you say, like, no, even leaving touch on what you said about yourself, you thought you were kind of a mediocre player.
Aye.
But there's a lot of mediocre players, but if they're coached right and they're developed right,
they become
fantastic players.
And again,
really, especially with a mental attitude as well too. Aye.
It really depends on the sport.
Yeah.
But there are people who haven't had the same ability, but because of their drive and determination,
they've made
as much of themselves as possible.
Mm. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? They've really
they've had their kind of genetic ceiling or their kind of capacity.
Exactly. Where you get a lot more talented people
that don't ever reach it.
Yeah.
But I suppose in the ultimate athlete is someone who's genetically gifted.
Mm.
But then has the drive and the determination to keep going. And,
You
probably think, the one I think off the top of my head is Cristiano Ronaldo.
Ah.
Mm.
He's made the most of what he has. Like, he's good genetics, but he is,
he's not as gifted as in terms of Messi, in terms of actual talent and football.
I don't think so.
No,
but
definitely not.
But if you look at what he's made of himself.
He's an athlete.
He is, absolutely is.
This leads on to a question then. What do you see is the difference between maybe general pop, someone from the general population, and an athlete? And maybe I'm talking about the way they approach things whenever they come to you. Because you do obviously work with some general pop. You have worked. But what's the difference when you see an athlete in front of you and you're questioning them or you're talking to them about... What do you see as the difference? And even at that, what's the difference between high level and maybe a medium tier?
Well, just the things that we've really been talking about. Genetics do play a huge role in it.
Yeah.
And people think, we can work hard and da-da. Only gets you so far. Genetics do play a big part in performance. But then there's... I suppose you can break it down into physiological and psychological aspects, where genetics being, physiological, in terms of... Do you know if you're a sprinter, then fast twitch fibers and become a big part of that. And so somebody who doesn't have the same genetics in terms of that will never make a 100-meter sprinter.
Yeah.
They just won't. No. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
So you look at the physiological and what they're suited to. But then you also look at the psychological then as well. So somebody who's good may be genetically really gifted, but in terms of their consistency, their motivation, their focus on their sport, then they may be good genetically and they'll get to a certain level and they may be a good level, but they may never reach the top level.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And there, I know there's athletes out there today who are genetically gifted, really genetically gifted, and they may win a few tournaments here and there, but if they actually push themselves, how good could they really be? But the very best athletes are the ones...
have a good mix of both, just.
A good mix of both. You know, good genetics, but you know, the will to succeed and the competitive nature. And that really drives them to try and win, like, you know, and really get the most out of themselves.
I heard someone saying before too about athletes just don't get bored. If they can do the boring stuff every day, day in, day out,
consistency.
They just never get bored.
Consistency is the key.
Whereas normal people just sacked.
I think it was Charles Poliquin one time, and they said, what's the difference between an athlete and like general population? He said, well, an athlete, you tell them they run on that wall with his head first, they'll ask you how many times. Because they think that they're doing something that's going to be good for them and push them forward.
But that's the other thing about top athletes is that they're coachable.
When you
tell them something that you want to, not tell them, but if you, when you ask them to do something, then generally they do it. Or you know, you might have a discussion, and generally those good athletes will be coachable. You are able to coach them. Yeah. And they're not bringing in their own opinions and expecting you to agree with them.
Yeah,
they're asking you questions.
Exactly,
and you're telling them what you think should happen.
Yeah.
Whereas I've had people coming in, and they're okay. They're okay athletes, and because I didn't smoke them in the gym, you know, and work them to the bone, then we're like, well, this is no good. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you're like, well, you're kind of missing the point here.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because if you go in and smoke people in the gym all the time, you know,
of course, they're going to
injury, sickness, and everything. You know,
100%.
And they have to understand what the bigger picture is.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
In terms of looking at, well, how many sessions a week are you doing in your own sport? How hard are those sessions?
Yeah.
And then that will affect then, in turn, how much then you can do with the athletes.
Yeah, exactly.
And the other thing is...
starting point, you mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
And the other thing is,
like, they have to have the humility to learn the technique first.
100%.
Yeah.
And that's really, really important. Mm. Because if they're not willing to do that, then it's going to be difficult for them.
Exactly. Mm. They're not ready to learn.
Do you feel that, I suppose, in a way, coaching athletes... technically is a wee bit easier, because they're not easier as such, but in terms of maybe like a general population client, because they are so driven, they do have a goal, they do have a vision, they have that kind of mental aspect that a lot of people don't have.
And the very best athletes are always looking for an edge, right? So if I say, if you do this, well, we're going to get improvements.
But they have to have total faith in you for that. Because look at the many people's
and you guys know yourself, the relationship you have with your clients or whatever, and the relationship with your athletes.
Yeah.
If they don't trust you, then it's pretty pointless.
Aye.
You know, they're not going to listen to what you say.
Exactly.
Yeah. So you're going to tell them to do something, and they're going, I don't believe in that, so I'm going to do something else.
Exactly.
And then it becomes confusing and everything else. You know, so... So they really have to trust what you tell them. And if they don't, then there's going to be problems.
Well, here's just taken from what Charles Parkman says, and I do believe that an athlete will ask you how many times when you tell them to run into a wall. They do seem to have faith in you. What happens if the coach is someone that really doesn't know what he's doing? Because obviously there's a lot of strength and conditioning coaches now out, and there's athletes working with some of them that are at a really high level. And the possibility is that they're getting seriously bad advice from a strength and conditioning coach, or someone that's not a strength and conditioning coach but maybe thinks they are.
It can be difficult, but I mean, after a while, I think the better ones will go, well, hang on a minute. I'm not actually getting better here. Do you know what I mean?
They're not seeing any.
But maybe not all the time.
No.
Yeah.
Do you know, and it can be the case, you know, where you're working with different sports and the coaches probably aren't at the level they should be. And sometimes that can be difficult then as well. Do you know, because they're doing things that they maybe shouldn't be doing. You know, and there are, you know, it does happen. Like, of course, you know, you know.
But even as you say, like a lot of athletes don't kind of jib on, they don't switch on, because a lot of them come in and do expect they just be like, right, this is what you have to do, and they come in and follow it, and they don't really look at the other side of it, or look in depth at it, or
they
what
don't
is
see the
actually
big picture,
working
in terms of what they, you know, what the plan is, you know. So, you know, a lot of, you know, we talked about this before, but a lot of what you see in terms of myths is that, you know, a strength and conditioning session is something where you come into the gym, and what it ends up being is a weighted circuit, you know, where you know, you're hammered, that life's hammered out of you, right? You know, and you get a good sweat, you know, and this is a strength and conditioning session, or maybe some Olympic lifts thrown in. But that's not what strength and conditioning is.
Yeah.
Strength and conditioning is a process where you are trying to train an athlete to prepare them optimally for competition. Right? So that's what it is, right? And so you have many aspects of that then. So do they need to improve their power? Do they need to improve their strength? Do they need to improve their endurance? And these are all aspects, you know, you need to improve their biomotor abilities and for the demands of their sport. And so that's what it is, more than just a single session taken in isolation. So instead of thinking of a weighted circuit, you know, which is a strength and conditioning session, which is fine, you know, and has its place, well, think about that as a muscular endurance session. You know, as part of a larger program. You get what I'm saying? Do you know?
I know what you mean. Obviously, there's things sold as strength and conditioning, and it really is a circuit, and as you say, has its place. Possibly not in terms of an athletic performance, or if you're not doing a proper program with an athlete, then it loses its viability, because it's basically a circuit.
Exactly.
And so really you're looking at what you want to think of is, well, what they need to do to be better at their sport.
At their sport.
And so what you need to do is look at the demands of the sport. So let's take football, for instance. A player may run 12 kilometres during a game, right? So we need to make sure that they're fit enough to do that. Do you know? And the better players, they run more at high intensity than the lower players. So we need to make sure that they're able to complete 12K, but also to run at high intensity for longer periods during the game. You know, so how do you do that? You know, and that's the key to strength and conditioning. Then you have to think of, how do I put a plan together to develop those qualities? While at the same time, they need to work on their technical and their tactical aspects of their sport as well. And that's the challenge. You know, because if you go and smoke that person all the time, they're not going to perform optimally at the end of the week.
Surely they would just
and do
box jumps.
That? And would you do that even, like, when it comes back to even positioning with the player?
Absolutely.
Like, understanding that, especially right, a centre half doesn't need to run like a midfielder. They don't need to have the same attributes.
So say, for example, you take a centre half. So what's one of the important things is vertical jump. Vertical jump. But also change of direction. They need to have good agility. They need to be able to change direction quickly when the ball comes over the top. And so speed, acceleration, change of direction, vertical jump. But to a degree, they need to have a good aerobic system as well, because they are going to complete, say they're running up for corners or back from corners or different aspects of that. So they do need to have a good aerobic system as well. Whereas you take a fullback, for instance, what do you need to have be good at for a fullback?
Up and down, up and down.
You need good at aerobic endurance, really good endurance, but you need to be fast because you've got a quick winger coming at you. You need good agility. You need to be strong. You know, so you have a lot of aspects that you need to cover. But
so the program's going to vary massively.
Between positions then as well. You know, and obviously then between difference in sports then as well. Like, so, example, if you take an endurance runner, and probably one of the things they do neglect is a little bit of strength and plyometrics, because those two things can help improve running economy. And so it's a little bit neglected, and it tends to be a little bit neglected. But then if you take that they're maybe doing over 10 sessions a week, and then you're trying to build that into that, sometimes unless they remove some of the sessions, and it's, you put it in, it's not going to work. And really what you're trying to do with those people is just trying to keep them injury free then.
Exactly.
And I think you touched on it earlier, and it's getting athletes to actually understand that, look, right, you don't need to be in here, no, busting the gut every single time. This is the process. This is going to benefit you. And even going back there, I remember, like, when Arsene Wenger started with Arsenal, 96, 97, and the guys then were getting flogged constantly every single season. And the players approached him before the start of the first season when they were working with Wenger. Aye. And he says, boss, we don't feel this if we're fit enough. We don't feel this if we've done enough running.
Aye.
He says, trust the process. He says, yous will be on point when the season starts.
Aye.
And they were. So they went down and double that year.
Absolutely. You know, but again, that's where you need to communicate with athletes.
Aye.
You know, to let them know what the plan is.
The plan is, exactly.
Because if you don't, and they think, well, what am I doing this for?
Aye. Then trust aspects. Then
there's trust aspects coming into that then as well.
Mm.
I would say trying to tell a runner not to run as much would be an issue.
Yeah.
Like, I think that
it can be, but it depends. And you know, a lot of, there is more research out there now to back up, you know, so it just depends on the athlete, and it depends. You got to work with the athlete and their coach then as well.
Yeah.
To give them that information, listen, if we do this, then we can get so much gain from this, you know. And it's maybe not that you do it all the time, but maybe periods throughout the year where you're trying to improve different abilities.
Yeah. I suppose if they understand, as you say, they understand the process and what the bigger goal is.
Yes.
And why it's going to be beneficial
it's
to them.
You know, what it's going to do to improve their performance.
Yeah. So they even going back, they like working with athletes, in terms of nutrition and things like that, what's the differences that you see there, like working with athletes and compared to maybe like general population when it comes to nutrition? Do you feel that even the guys that are at that maybe 5 or 10% that wee bit better, they've got all that on point as well too?
Not always.
No?
Not always.
Really?
Definitely not. And especially in your younger athletes, you really try and instill those principles of eating good food, you know, eating, you know, plenty of fruit and vegetables and good proteins, good sources of protein. But again, they're probably at the mercy of what's happening in their home life. Do you know what I mean? All you can do is trying to educate the athlete, but educate the parents as well, because those are the ones who are feeding them and making their food.
Yeah.
And in fairness, the schools now, they're starting to get a little bit better, and that, you know, at break time, they're going, well, you know, what we want you to do is bring a piece of fruit or something healthy, right, rather than bringing, you know, and it is starting to get better in terms of the education, in terms of that. But the home life is generally where, you know, we need to work on and improve the most.
Are you taking that from kids or like say seasoned athletes or like really kind of high level professionals?
So that's in terms of kids. In terms of seasoned athletes, the best athletes that I've worked with are always looking for that age.
Yeah.
And so they will do what it takes.
Yeah.
So they will make the sacrifices that they need to make to get to the level they want to do.
More obsessed, obviously, in a good way.
Yes.
Yeah.
But not always.
No.
You know, there are always people who perform at a really high level, but they're maybe not looking after themselves as much as they need to.
Yeah, right. And is that again kind of where maybe genetics will come into play and help them out a bit better?
Genetics can help, and depending on what their sport is, they maybe get away with it a little bit more than maybe in some other sports they just wouldn't get away with.
Well, I don't think Eddie Hall really writes much of diet plan. It's 13,000 calories a day or something.
Just as many as you can.
Exactly.
You're feeding me a slingshot.
You know,
buffet.
But it just depends on the sport.
Of course,
how much you can get away with it. But there are sports where, do you know, their lifestyle is you know, at the very top level is they're making a lot of sacrifices to do what they do.
Yeah.
So I know, obviously, anyone at the top of their sport and any professional athlete, apart from maybe a darts player, has to be worried about this. But who do you see is the most obsessed, or who would you say that coming in the door, so they tell you they're involved in a certain sport and you go, this guy's going to be ready to go above and beyond? Like, what would you say is the toughest?
Well, in terms of, it really depends, you know, on the individual more so than the sport sometimes. But the individual sports tend to be that way more than the team sports.
The team sports.
Because in the team sports, you can get away with a little bit more because it's a team game and there's so many variables involved. Mm. When you're a track and field athlete and you have to hit certain times, then, you know, you have to make a lot more sacrifices if you're at the top end of judo and you're fighting against some of the ultra competitive Japanese fighters,
yeah,
I mean it's
crazy how much how far they'll go.
Oh, absolutely! I mean, the dedication is incredible. Like, you know, so it really just depends on the sport, and even within football, I mean, there's people who are ultra competitive and will do anything to succeed.
Have an age.
Aye.
Well, who do you like working with?
I I like the variety, to be honest. Right? I like working with a variety of sports. And the thing that really interests me is looking at what they actually do in their sport.
Yeah.
Right. So I'll go and I'll speak a lot to coaches and go, well, what are they actually doing here? And it's maybe a sport that I've never done before, but I'll go and try and find the best coaches and speak to them and find out what they actually do, what their processes are, what skills they are learning, or what skills they're working on with their athletes. And that's interesting, you know, because then if you can work closely with a coach who has good knowledge, then your programming becomes a lot more specific, maybe than when you're just working with an athlete, but you don't have access to the coach.
Yeah.
And so you don't really know what's going on, what training they're doing, and what their intentions are.
Do you know what I
mean? But generally, you know, the better athletes are coachable. And if you get a coachable athlete who's willing to listen and willing to do what they're asked, you know,
exactly
and
what you want them.
And sometimes those better athletes, you have to pull them back a wee bit because they want to do more and more.
Yeah.
And sometimes you have to put the reins in those guys and go, well, actually, you've done enough now. We need to rest here. You know, you need to recover.
Yeah.
And the better athletes will listen, or they might have an experience where they don't listen, and they end up getting injured or sick, and then they go the next time they go, well, actually, let's do it this way.
Yeah.
Do you understand?
100%.
See, even when you were starting out, Kyle, like, what difficulties did you find? Like, say, for somebody else that's listening to the podcast, wants to go down the same career path as yourself.
Aye.
What difficulties did you find trying to set out on your own path and go down the line that you've went down in terms of education?
I mean, a lot of the universities are churning out a lot of students now, so there's a lot of strength and conditioning degrees and masters now. There's a lot of sports science coaches, and I was reading somewhere that it was like 8,000 sports science graduates like in the UK per year or something of that nature, or maybe it's over a few years, I don't know. So there's a lot of people coming out with qualifications. But there's not an awful lot of jobs, you know, that are decent jobs and paying decent salaries. And and I think the problem in the industry of sports science and strength and conditioning as a whole is that strength and conditioning coaches aren't being paid what they're worth.
No.
And like I see posts up all the time in terms of intern, you're going to do an intern for a year and you're not going to get paid anything.
No.
Yeah.
Or, you know, strength and condition job paying $18,000 a year. Well, hang on a minute. You know, I've just done my degree. I've got a master's.
Exactly.
I've got so many years' experience.
Yeah.
Do you know, and you're like, well, you know, people aren't really being paid what they're worth in terms of, you know,
as much as it should.
Whereas maybe the sports coaches are getting paid a lot more.
Yeah.
But the strength and condition coach role is as valuable.
Of course.
You know, if you're working in a good team environment where you're working with a coach. And that's where the difficulties are now in the industry, in that there's a lot of graduates, but not an awful lot of good jobs.
And do you feel that even, like, sorry just to interrupt, but you just mentioned it there and it kind of stuck out, because do you think that, especially in a lot of sports, that there's still nearly a stigma around, like strength and conditioning, especially like football and stuff, especially when it comes to even maybe lifting weights and things like that there's still a stigma there, you can't do that type of training, it's going to slow us down, it's going to have a negative effect.
It depends on the sport and it depends on the coach. Some sports know they need it, right? So if you look at rugby now, rugby is, huge in the performance analysis and performance coaches and whatever, because they know they need it.
They know.
You take something like football,
GAA's
improving. I think probably Dublin have changed the way people look at it now.
Yeah.
Where they go, well, hang on, Dublin are winning. How many have they won in a row now?
Yeah.
And then other counties are going, well, hang on a minute, what are they actually
doing? What are they doing differently?
And what are they doing differently? Do you know? And what do we need to be doing to actually catch up with
them?
And that's at that level. At a lower level in GAA, it can be a little bit mixed in terms of some of the practices that go on. Football is the same. It really depends who the coach and the manager is.
Yeah.
You know, if they're willing to buy into what you're trying to achieve. So some people think that the strength and condition coach is there to, or the sports scientist is there to direct everything, but that's not really the case. They are there to facilitate the training. And if you get a good team, and you know, every athlete or team should have a good team of people around them.
Mm-hmm.
So your coaches, your managers, your physiotherapist, your nutritionist, your strength and condition coach, your sports scientist. And if you have a really good team and a real good culture, then they all fit together. It's like cogs in a wheel.
Of course.
You know, every discipline is a cog in the wheel with the manager at the top. And that's the way it should be.
Yeah,
but often in case it's not, it's not the way it is.
Finances and everything else.
Finances. It depends who's leading.
I was going to say out of the mall.
If you had if you had to take a pick out of the mall, say they didn't have the funds, the finances available, and they could pick maybe one or two. What would be the most important to a team to implement, other than the manager and coach, in terms of performance?
Well, would you draw in a lot of us? Do you deal with nutrition? I know you say maybe it's not your forte, but
I think when you are a sports scientist or a strength and conditioning coach, you have to. Depending on who you work with. Now, at the very highest level, you have all these people.
Yeah.
You know? But if you don't, if you're not working at that level, then you have to wear a few different hats.
That's what I was going to say.
Do you know?
You are them, all them people.
So you're doing all the strength work, but then you're doing all their physiological testing maybe as well. You're speaking to them about their nutrition, their lifestyle. You're like a psychologist as well, because they're coming to you with because you work closely with them,
of course.
Then they come to you with their problems, and that's important to understand as well, because if they have difficulties or having difficulties in their personal life, that's going to have a huge impact on their performance and their training and stuff.
I've been able to read that as a coach.
And so you have to be aware of all these aspects around the individual, because
sometimes
each
it just doesn't follow a plan, a theory.
Absolutely. I mean, you set out a basic plan, but I mean, that plan changes quite often, depending on the athlete. Do they get injured?
Mm-hmm.
Are they having problems in their personal life? Are they lacking motivation at a specific time? You know, so it really changes in terms of maybe they're having sickness, you know, have a bout of sickness and stuff. And so all these things have an impact on it. And there's so many variables that go into it. And so you have to be aware that every athlete is an individual too.
Mm-hmm.
And they react to different stimuluses. Uh-huh. So I'll give you a program and you might react, you know, you might put on a lot of gains very quickly.
Yeah.
Whereas if I give you a program... You might react differently to it, and so it's understanding. it's understanding then how different people react to different stimuluses, and also their different personalities.
Yeah,
because everybody, how you speak to somebody might be different depending on their personality.
Yeah,
of course.
Do you know how you motivate somebody? Mm.
Yeah,
you know. So somebody,
it's finite, isn't it? There is like there's certain variables that always make
there's
it
so many
sense.
Variables. Yeah. I know. Like in sport now, technology is becoming a big thing now as well, where we're collecting a lot of data. But there's still the softer skills in terms of coaching skills and stuff, and knowing the individual that are important skills to have.
And obviously, I'm sure you go through all that in your courses or in uni, but you've gained a lot from experience of working with individuals and knowing how to talk to certain
people. That's where you
people.
Really learn. I mean, you know your basic information through your university and your education, and you go on different courses or whatever. But what you really learn is how do you implement them when you're experienced, but also how then deal with people. And that's a huge aspect as well. And it's not everybody you're going to get on with either.
No, I get on with everyone, but I know you. I'm quite a people person.
But everybody has different personalities, and there's people that you'll be naturally drawn to that you'll be able to talk to and whatever. And there'll be other people that you're not. And so it's making sure that you...
picking the right people that work for you.
Picking the right people, but still being able to, you know, even though you mightn't just gel or click, but still being able to communicate with them. Or if there's other people in your organization who have a better relationship with them, then they might be better working with them then as well. So it really just depends on the individual a lot, because we're all different.
Of course, course.
And so, I say there's so many variables, and when you're training different individuals, you know, even within a team setting.
Brilliant,
For sure. And what about Aspire? How long is Aspire open now?
Probably 9 years, I think.
9 years.
9 years.
Yeah.
So we're there for a fair bit. We tend to look after athletes mostly, and we would go. We do a lot of athlete profiling. We may be going out to teams and stuff.
They contact you then, Kyle, coaches and things, obviously.
So there's that aspect of it, and then do a little bit of consulting with a few organizations and a little bit of mentoring then as well. We get a lot of requests to do mentoring, but I only really take a few because. you know, it depends on the person and their circumstances and how motivated they are, because in this industry you really have to be passionate and you've got to read a lot.
There's not a lot of jobs for the coaches, so you need to be at the top of your game. So
absolutely, you got to do a lot of reading, you got to do a lot of research, you got to be prepared to go and network, you know, go to conferences and network with people, because that's where you're going to pick up a lot of information. And and really the industry is it is about networking, because that's how you get into different organizations and stuff as well, you know.
What problems did you find when you opened up Aspire? So we work with a lot of guys opening up gyms and stuff, and again it's just going to be different because it's a performance center.
Still a business though.
Of course, it's obviously two different things.
A little bit different in that, you know, you're not targeting everybody to come in, and there's not an awful lot of senior athletes, you know, and then there's the aspect of the senior athletes, how much money do they have to pay for it?
Yeah.
Do you know, because a lot of times athletes don't have a lot of money, do you know, at that level, because they're really pushing to try and get to the next level. And so they're maybe not working, you know, to try and fund different things, you know, and it depends on whether they're getting funded through their governing body and stuff as well. Yeah. So a lot of times they don't have a lot of money. And I suppose that's in terms of athletes, and you know, at that level, then that can be difficult. So
did you find that hard for yourself, maybe in terms of, I suppose, marketing or like?
I really struggle with marketing. Like I'm quite.
Well, I would like to say you're awful at it, to be honest. Can I say it, or does that need to be edited out?
No, I say this every time I see you,
it's like it keeps it a secret from people.
A lot of times I see a lot of fakeness about, you know, and I'm just like, I just can't be dealing with that. Like, I suppose it's probably trying to get it out in a certain way. Like,
but it's not where your passion lies. Like, not really, in something completely different. And
I'm good at that.
You see,
I'm good at talking about myself.
But you see that, and at the end of the day, if you're doing a PhD and you're doing all that coaching, and you don't have a lot of time to be doing a lot of marketing either.
No.
Maybe it's bringing somebody in.
The time aspect of it must be tough on you. Tell me about the PhD. Well, I know we have it kind of that we want to talk about it. What is exactly the type of it, and what do you hope to achieve on it?
So I'm doing a PhD part-time down in Ulster University, down in Coleraine, and I'm between the departments of psychology and biomedical science there. And what we're looking at is hydration and cognitive function in martial artists. So we're looking at karate, Brazilian jiu-jitsu, and judo. And what we're actually doing is we're getting athletes from those sports to do a training session, 90-minute training session, and we're monitoring their hydration before and after, and then we're getting them to do a cognitive test, and then we're looking at differences between dehydrated and hydrated athletes, seeing how hydration status impacts then on their cognitive function. So looking at reaction time, executive function, which is thinking skills, decision making skills, and working memory as well. So analyzing those aspects, you know, as compared to dehydrated and hydrated.
What about, like, I've read some citing research here, but about studies basically saying that cognitive response is improved from exercise.
So absolutely. Yeah. No, it depends on the level. It depends on the level of exercise, the intensity, and the duration of exercise, because it will improve cognitive performance to a point.
And then after that point, there's a
decrement in performance. And what we've actually seen, and we're still recruiting participants, but what we've actually seen is in the dehydrated group, improved their reaction time.
The dehydrated group?
The dehydrated group improved the reaction time significantly more than the hydrated group.
Right.
And which was not really what we expected to see.
No.
But there's a degree of exercise stimulating cognitive function.
Aye, of course.
But there may be also like a homeostatic process where the brain's protecting itself by increasing blood flow and stuff as well. Okay. But it depends to what degree. I mean, most of our participants are losing less than 2% body weight. Okay. Once you go over that, then it may have an impact. And also the environment that you're in as well will have an impact in terms of if it's really warm,
yeah,
then okay, it tends to have a bigger impact, maybe have a bigger impact.
In terms of hydration, dehydration, how, like, what way is it done? How long are they being dehydrated for, or what percentage?
What we do is we give them a 24-hour sheet to record what fluids they take, but what we're doing, we're measuring before exercise to see whether they're in a dehydrating group. So we're not actually telling them.
Right.
But interestingly enough, what we thought would be that might be around 50-50 who come in dehydrated and hydrated. And I think the numbers are 52% dehydrated and 48% hydrated.
Right.
So it's worked out quite well in terms of that. Like, you know,
so they don't know what the study actually is. You're not.
No, they know what it is.
Yeah, but you're not telling them.
But we just get them to do their normal thing.
Right, yeah. Okay.
And then we measured.
Right. Brilliant.
So
good.
So,
that is interesting. Imagine like doing that and, as your job. Well, essentially, I don't know if it's paid or not, but imagine having to do something.
And how long is that constantly. For, Kyle? How long does that go on? How long is the study going on?
So we have recruited around 60 participants at the minute, and we have maybe another 90 to recruit.
Marty McLaughlin up on there, is he?
Marty, I've been down with Marty a few times. he hasn't actually done the test yet, but
get him on.
Marty's going to have
90 minutes of training. I think I've seen Marty
do that anymore, does he? He's retired.
He's going to choke me out for saying that.
No, man,
it was really good having you on.
Thanks for coming on, Ken.
You're always like my go-to boy when I'm thinking of anything I need performance-related, which probably
mobility.
Not for me. I'm mobility.
No,
when we talked about football there, I was like, I know absolutely nothing about football. I'm guessing these positions. But, man, as I say, it's really good to get you on. No and worries. If anyone is looking to get Kyle, you can connect with him, obviously, on Facebook at Aspire Fitness, isn't that right?
Aspire Fitness and Performance,
On Facebook. And as I say, it's great to have you on, bud, and you're doing good things. Probably get you back on whenever you get the PhD done.
We'll see.
Well, 20 years' time?
No, I hope not.
Excellent.
Thanks, buddy.
Cheers,
thank you very much. Elevate.